Hello, this is Josh Hanke of SandbagFitnessSystems.com, and today I have a very special guest, strength coach John Albino. John is the creator of How to Get Ripped Abs program. You can find his program on howtogetrippedabs.com. John is an amazing strength coach that I have followed his work for some time, some very innovative programs upon fat loss, not the old stagnant type of fat loss programs that many people are familiar with. So for the next hour, we're going to get to pick John's brain about how to optimize fat loss training, both for clients and people that are training themselves. So, John, I'd like to thank you for joining us today and taking a lot of time out of your day.
Thank you for having me, Josh. I'm happy to be here.
So, John, you know, the first question I always like to ask people is how did your basic philosophy come about, and how do you see it as being different as what's out there right now?
Well, in regards to fat loss specifically, I come from a bodybuilding background. So I started just doing traditional bodybuilding. This is going back into like the late 80s, early 90s. And I was training at Diamond Gym at the time. It was a real hardcore gym out of New Jersey. And we did basic bodybuilding. We did split routines. So we split up body parts and dedicate different days to them. We did a lot of very strict dieting. And we performed like general steady state type of cardiovascular activity and sometimes even up to two sessions per day, twice a day. And this does work well to get in shape. So we all were very, very lean. We all did lose body fat. But one day came about where I got together with a bunch of my buddies from high school, and we had a pickup game of football. Now, these guys have been drinking beers. They've been partying. And I'm the guy that's training every day. So we go out to play, and I felt like, damn, I got to warm up a lot. Like, I felt like all that training didn't lead to any athleticism, and in some cases, I feel like it did hurt me. So there may have been a conversion maybe of, you know, fast-twitch fibers taking on slow-twitch fiber characteristics, etc. So at this point, I said, this cannot be the best way to train, where I have to warm up more than these guys. I feel almost less athletic in certain aspects of you know, we just run around playing a pickup game of football. And at that point, I started to look back into my athletic background when I used to play sports and the type of training I was doing. And I started to take bits and pieces of that and integrate them into my bodybuilding routine. So slowly but surely, this was an evolutionary process that took several years. And I'm still, you know, it's at a point now where it's still evolving pretty much, but I'm at a point where for the last 3 or 4 years, it's been pretty solidly perfected. So I have a combination now of the bodybuilding background that I had and the success I was able to get, that I started to integrate more athletic style of training into that. So now I have a slightly different physique, and it creates different physiques, where people now look like a lean, fit athlete, whereas doing a bodybuilding routine, you do take on a bodybuilder type of look. So you could get, if you're in a bulking phase, you get a little bit of a puffy look. If you get ripped, you kind of look ripped, but you also look kind of weak and skinny.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. My program is different in that I have power phases, strength phases. I integrate a lot of what I've learned from you with your sandbag work. And I've created a program that I feel it produces the best results that I have seen. And I've really worked with just about every type of fat loss method over the last 15, 16 years.
Well, and that's interesting because, you know, most people talk about either doing one or the other. They train high interval based all the time, and you know, others, they're doing the steady state. You know, how have you been basically able to find, you know, and tweak your methods? Sounds like you're doing a unique integration of both. Sort of a little bodybuilding and athletic preparation. How does that all fit together?
Well, for the steady state and interval specifically, I prefer to do interval training. I prefer to do cardiovascular exercises that require you to move your body through space. So instead of just sitting on a stationary bike, I'd prefer to run sprints. Instead of jogging on a treadmill, I prefer to push a prowler or drag a sled outside. Now, those activities give you more bang for your buck because you could get a strength component, a conditioning component, a fat loss component. It does require good mobility, so it forces your joints to work through a healthy range of motion. I prefer them. If someone does need to do to burn a significant amount of calories above and beyond what we could do outside, then I would have them do an integration of some of the steady state following the harder interval work, just not to prevent overtraining.
Mm-hmm.
So if someone was going to run, sprints are going to be superior, let's say, to a stationary cycling workout. But I can't have someone run 7 days a week of high intensity, high volume of sprints.
Right.
So that's always, if you have a pyramid, the sprint work or the high intensity interval work would be at the base of the pyramid, and we would only integrate the other forms to prevent overtraining or prevent any type of overuse injuries, knee tendonitis, like patella tendonitis happens a lot if you do too much jumping and running, as you know. So I only use some of the steady state stuff to prevent that from happening.
And how often would you use something like that? Is that a couple of days a week just more for feeding recovery purposes, or?
But it goes individual to individual. It really depends on where the person is at and how, if we have a specific date that we're targeting, if someone has any type of a competition, then I'll integrate even more of that. If there's no date, then you could do twice a week steady state cardio. And just also when I do that workout, I have them do some mobility work as well. So it just becomes a good recovery day, and it does burn additional calories and keeps their metabolism high on an off day of intense training.
And we get a lot of people that are coming from the background of, you know, busy professionals, or people or coaches that are running boot camps or personal training people that may only see their clients 2 to 3 days a week, or individuals that are only able to train maybe 3 to 4 days a week. Is there a way to sort of integrate your system within that model?
Sure. When you have limited time, we have to do exercises, routines, and even eating regimens, which we'll speak about later, mm-hmm. that fit into that type of lifestyle. So you have limited time to train. We have to do all components of training that give us the most bang for our buck. So most importantly, if you're not training 5 or 6 days a week like a professional athlete would be, and you have two to three sessions per week, each lasting about an hour, inside of each of those routines that we do, so each hour that we train, it's important to do a type of routine that will stimulate your metabolic rate and your metabolism to stay elevated, not only during the workout, but long afterwards. So your metabolism, if you train, let's say, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, you perform the workout on Monday, that workout should stimulate your metabolism to stay elevated till the workout on Wednesday, and then so on and so forth. So your metabolic rate can stay elevated all day, and this way you don't have to go on those real restrictive, very low-calorie diets and just start losing muscle and losing strength. So the workouts themselves have to be intense enough where you have the EPOC effect, or you have, after the workout is finished, metabolic rate stays elevated.
And for those that are a little unfamiliar with intensity, you're not just talking about, you know, going to bicep curls for exhaustion. You're talking about big compound lifts for the most part with these types of programs?
Definitely. If you're only going to be training 2 or 3 days a week, each workout should be a full body workout design. So every muscle group gets worked using only big compound movements,
mm-hmm.
and those will give you the most bang for your buck. Those will stimulate your metabolism the most, and you won't have to do all the extra, you know, accessory type work, like working the small muscle groups at the end, which is okay to do, but they do become time consuming. And if someone has a time constraint, that wouldn't be an ideal program design for them.
And, staying along those lines, you talked about the benefits of sled training and sprints, which are all phenomenal activities. Is there something people can do similar indoors, whether they're training at home or maybe a small training facility that doesn't have that type of equipment? Is there sort of equivalents that they could incorporate?
Sure. In those cases, and I live in Jersey, as you know, so we have winters that make it difficult, definitely some days, to get outside. So during those days, I love to do sandbag circuits. I'll integrate some kettlebell work. So, again, full body exercises. They don't have to be very heavy on these days, but I like to use a multiple station style of program design where you go from one exercise to another exercise to another exercise. This way you'll keep your heart rate up. You have a great conditioning component. You could be indoors. You don't need more than like a 3 by 3 feet by 3 feet space on the floor. So you could even do it in a public gym.
Sure.
And, And sandbags and kettlebells are two things that I like to do indoors. I probably prefer to do sandbag, kettlebell, or just straight up body weight circuits indoors. And all three of them work. They all work great. I do like to rotate them. One, it prevents the mental boredom if I just stick with one of the three. And two, I feel like it does give the body a different stimulus, which seems to increase the rate of fat loss and increase the rate of results, whatever we're going for during that phase.
Absolutely. Yeah, I always try to tell people, you know, there's a lot of tools in that toolbox. You've got to know when to use them correctly.
Exactly.
So, you know, if you do get someone who's a little more high level or someone who has a little more time to train, you know, how do they interweave those different training methods, you know, and not get overtrained? And how may you set up a program for someone who's maybe trying to be an elite athlete or someone who is an elite athlete or someone who's training an elite athlete?
And you're asking specifically about preventing overtraining and integrating?
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, how's the training sort of start to alter when you have someone who has a little higher level conditioning, has a little more freedom in their training?
Well, when I train an athlete, I do integrate the sled work and the prowler pushes, and I find that there's several things that prevents the athletes from overtraining. One, because they're very serious, they do focus more on rest and recovery, so they get optimal amounts of sleep. Their nutrition is pretty much spot on because something is very important to them. Also, when you have an athlete, I start them in the beginning of their off-season training with a little bit less training volume, and as their body adapts, then I could increase it as they get closer to the season. I get a little bit more specific as they get closer to the season. So when an athlete is getting ready for the season, at that point I would consider switching from the full body workouts to even an upper lower split if they're going to be doing a ton of running outside and a ton of plyos and sled dragging and prowler pushing. That would be one consideration. So I would have, in the beginning of the season, more just traditional strength work, and as I started to integrate the other methods, such as the sled and the prowler pushing, sprinting, depth jumping, or any type of plyos that would be specific for their sporting needs, at that point I may cut back a little bit on the strength work, integrate more of that, and that would be almost a continuum from the first week of their off-season training to the last week before they go report to camp. But like I said, they're going to be able to recover better because they really do focus on, you know, they will do their dynamic mobility work, and they do all of the extra. So I find that with the elite athletes, they don't overtrain. I still control their volume. As they start doing more of the outdoor, more specific work, I will cut back a little bit on their lower body training just to prevent their knees from getting beaten up too much.
Sure, no, excellent advice. And, you know, staying with the athlete realm, because there's a lot of people that maybe they're working with their kids or even working with high-level athletes, you know, because I think everyday people realize, you know, they want to be lean in some sort or another, more for cosmetic reasons. But you had an interesting article about how, you know, it affects their performance, and with things like the combines just ending like that. You know, could you talk a little bit about why it's important for athletes to be lean and sometimes how underrated it can be?
Sure. Well, Most athletic endeavors require the athlete to move their body at high speeds, both laterally and linearly. So whenever you have additional body fat, which is non-contractile tissue, so unless you're a football lineman, there's not many sports that extra body fat or excess body fat is going to be helpful to your performance. When you have the extra body fat for any of the other either football positions or just about any other sport, that non-contractile tissue is just going to slow you down. So it's almost like if you were playing a sport and you had a backpack, let's say if you were 20 pounds overweight, you have a backpack of 20 additional pounds on you. Now, I know that you do a lot of training with weight vests and sandbags, and any additional weight on your body is going to fatigue you more.
So absolutely.
First and foremost is you increase your rate of fatigue, which essentially hurts your endurance during your sporting event. Secondly, you're going to move slower. So now you're going to have to drag extra weight, which is going to slow you down. So you're getting slower, and you're going to have worse endurance or less endurance. And another factor that really no one speaks of, but I have found that heavier guys always have more knee injuries or lower extremity injuries. So it also prevents injuries if you're lighter. I got even some guys when they come to start their training for their off season with me, if they're heavy and overweight, I have to, and I learned this over years of making mistakes, I've learned I can't give them a lot of contact during a plyometric workout because of the knee inflammation and the sometimes even ankle injuries that can occur.
Mm-hmm.
So getting lean for an athlete is extremely important to me. It's something I do focus on with a lot of them.
Because I think a lot of people would be surprised. Not all. I think there's the assumption that athletes come in to most training very lean and they enjoy training, but that's not necessarily the case, is it?
No, it's definitely not. It's cultural from sport to sport. Definitely some sports guys are more into training year-round. Like a lot of the football skill position guys that I train, they like to come in pretty good shape. They stay in decent shape. Not too much of a problem with them, but linemen really don't care. They come in out of shape every year to me. Hockey guys, for some reason, seem to really like to party. And training them. They're great guys, but they're just slugging down beers all off season. They come in out of shape. And my baseball guys are it's kind of hit or miss with them. So no, definitely the athletes do not come in great shape. A lot of times after a real hard off season training, then a real tough season, they're kind of burned out. So, you know, with all due respect to them, they do come out of shape, but I do understand why, because they need to take a break just like anybody else.
Sure. And you know, maybe we can get some recommendations, because we get a lot of people on our list that are coaching youth athletes, you know, mostly high school age, and they're interested in basically learning how to optimize their performance. Are there principles they could take that you use with the pros that would be applicable with this group? Because, you know, obviously it's a different mentality, a different accountability level. But do you have some thoughts that you could share with those coaches?
Sure. What I do when I have the youth athletes, oftentimes I have a young athlete come in and he has, let's just say, for example, he has tight hips. Hip mm-hmm. flexors, glutes are tight. Doesn't allow him to maintain a good neutral curve in his spine performing squats. That whole first off season, I will not let him squat at all. I will not let him pull weights off the floor until he's ready to do it safely. So initially with a youth athlete, I do like to go through a progression of just getting that body into balance and have good mobility so they could train intensely without having risk of injury. Also, when I'm training the youth guys, when every single time I tell them, and this has been at least 80%, I'll tell them, okay, we're going to do our strength work here. Here's your conditioning workout. You could do it tomorrow. Oftentimes, they won't do it on their own. So what I've done now is I have them group up together to do some of their speed and strength work. And if there's a group going, they know they're committed to go, and they have to be accountable to the rest of the group, because you know the younger guys are, they all, you know, talk smack to each other and stuff, so one guy just can't show up or won't show up late. So I definitely like to train them in groups, and I also find I used to have the younger guys train at a separate time from the more advanced guys or the pro guys, and a couple times just by mistake they had to work in at the same during the same hour in my training center, mm-hmm. and I found that the younger guys really got a good kick in the ass from seeing the other guys training, and they stepped up to the plate, where initially I was trying to keep it a little bit more subdued, a little bit more individual instruction, a little bit smaller of a group, and I found that training them together helped them, because they would watch what the other guys were doing and really want to step up and try to become, you know, a top dog in there as fast as they could. So definitely training in groups, mixing the level of experience turned out to be a pretty good thing. And the younger guys, a lot of times they'll play, another fact is the fact that they play multiple sports.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're training a professional football player, he's playing football and that's it. So he has all off season to get rest and recovery and good training for preparation for the season. When training the younger guys, they train multiple sports. So that is something to consider when doing a program design. If you have a guy that's, he wants to really prioritize football, yet he has a football, his last game is a Thanksgiving Day game, and the next Friday he's got wrestling practice. Mm-hmm. So he wants to start training during wrestling practice. So this is often a scenario that you have where you have to say, okay, he's wrestling now, so he's getting in plenty of conditioning. What's optimal for us to on now to prepare him for the months to come to get ready for next football season. So there's some consideration, but the considerations are really individual and depends on what the athlete's doing, how many sports he's playing, and if he has any injuries to address, et cetera.
And I don't know what you're seeing out there, John, but we see a lot of kids that I hate to say are on the youth obesity side, even though they're athletes. Is that something you see, and how do you address kids that are really coming in, you know, kind of heavy, kind of out of shape? Is there special methods and sort of programs that you use for those type of kids?
Yeah, yes, absolutely. The most difficult problems that you face when you have, and I see this all the time just like you do, kids come in, they're overweight, and they're really at the mercy of their parents. So
right.
Not that many 16-year-old kids are going to go home and start, you know, baking and pan frying. And it's just at that age where they're not going to do it. They're not going to carry around, you know, Tupperwares with bodybuilding foods, you know, and eat six meals a day. So what I do with them is I give them definitely have to start immediately with dietary guidelines. They have I give them a structured diet, but everything has to be very, very easy to follow. Like I can't give them anything difficult. So I will utilize when they're at school during the day. I'm not a big supplement guy, but I will utilize shakes with them.
Mm-hmm.
So almost all of them will have two of their meals while they're at school are going to be shakes. And I just have them dump the powder in a Tupperware container. Don't even add the water until you're ready to drink it. And then in between classes, they'll just add water. They'll shake it up. And they'll drink and they'll have a meal. Breakfast, I'll give them a typical breakfast. That's something that's easy to grab. I even ask them if their parents help them out in the morning. And sometimes their moms are up with them getting ready for work, and they'll make a breakfast for everybody. So that depends on their situation. But the shakes are big with the guys. If they're overweight, I do have them do extra conditioning work, and I have to do that from. From week one, I just have them do some extra work as soon as the workout's over. Maybe a lot of the other guys will start doing some mobility stuff, and they will start doing a little bit more conditioning stuff afterwards until I get their body fat to a place where I feel like it's going to be optimal for whatever sport that they're playing.
Well, since the evil S-word, I'll ask you about it because I think it's always one that people are intrigued about. They always think they still think there's a magic pill. So what is your view on supplementation? Who is it appropriate for, and what do you like?
Well, best thing for sure is going to be whole food. And the only reason why I do any type of supplements is because of the convenience factor. It's very difficult to eat multiple meals that are perfectly clean all day long. So I do use protein shakes or meal replacement shakes. For the last close to 2 years now, I've been using almost exclusively combinations of rice, pea, and hemp proteins. And I have found that they say the amino acid profile is not as strong as whey protein. I have found that if that is true, that's only true in the lab. Because a lot of guys with a lot of the dairy shakes, they're all based on dairy products. Those dairy shakes all cause, oftentimes bloating or diarrhea for the guys. So I have the rice and pea protein I use quite a bit of now. I still will use some whey protein with some of the guys. The guys that need to gain weight, I will have them use a carbohydrate powder as part of a post-workout shake. And it doesn't have to be anything fancy, just straight-up maltodextrin, or you could use waxy maize. And I have them mix that with whey protein or, like I said, the pea and rice protein, and that would be a post-workout shake. For essential fatty acids, I will have guys take fish oil capsules that don't eat fish. If not, then if they eat fish, I just have them take some flax oil. Some guys that have a real poor diet, I will have them put flax seeds in to get some essential fats and some fiber. Multivitamin is something that I will consider if guys don't eat a lot of fruits and vegetables. But above and beyond that, for those the performance supplements, I haven't found them to do much, and I've tried creatine every way you could possibly imagine. I'm mixing it with sugar, loading, not loading. I haven't seen enough results with it to have to warrant guys taking it. So basically, protein powder for meal replacement. I'll have post-workout shake, especially for guys who need to gain weight or gain muscle. I'll have essential fatty acids and perhaps a multiple vitamin. But beyond that, I've tried just about everything out there, and I haven't seen anything really worth the money or the time. And especially some of the newer stuff now, I can't even pronounce some of the words. So I can't imagine them being healthy, you know?
Right, and I'm glad to hear you talk about the hemp pea and rice protein, because I actually did a post about that some time ago and got probably the biggest response of harassment in my life talking about how I didn't know what I was talking about. But I actually found that I got leaner and bigger, and many of my clients got leaner by using it more consistently in a way, because we found the same instances of bloating and gassing that you did. So it's interesting to see how we've all some sort of came to the same conclusions.
Yeah, I find it works absolutely great, and I've read every study that's performed, and every breakdown, and you look at molecular weight and biological value, and I've read every single way of measuring protein quality, and you know, whey seems to always score on top, but I'm a little bit suspicious that maybe those studies are funded by the dairy industry or some of the bigger companies that make a lot of money selling dairy-based shakes, because the hemp, the pea, and the rice, I've had guys get ripped on it. I've had guys get bigger on it. I use it exclusively now. I don't drink dairy shakes at all anymore. And my strength is as good as it's been, and I'm as lean as I was. So it's definitely very, very valid. And I would suggest to all your listeners to give it a try. And some of them will get better results if they have any sensitivity to dairy.
Sure.
At all. They'll actually get better results from it.
Absolutely, and I think most people do, so it's very, very sound advice. So, you know, it's something you and I were talking briefly over on the phone before we started, was just the fact that I like to relate things to things that people are going to see all the time, because I'm sure even with your athletes and with your general clients, they ask you about stuff they see on TV, and there probably is nothing bigger right now than The Biggest Loser. And one great post you have about fat loss is not losing more than 2 pounds a week. Yet on these shows, they're showing people losing 10, 15, 20 pounds. I've gotten clients asking me how come they shouldn't do that. So, you know, what's your thought about losing more than 2 pounds a week? Why should that be the case?
Well, the first week someone starts a diet is a week I would actually expect them to lose more than 2 pounds a week, but they'll be losing a combination of fat, water, and also energy substrates or stored energy in the muscles. So they lose 6 pounds the first week. They get excited, but they really didn't lose 6 pounds of fat. They probably lost 1 or 2 pounds of fat, and the rest being the other components that I just spoke about. So if you try to lose fat too fast, and by doing that, most people, when they attempt this, they're going to have a very low-calorie diet that they're going to follow. They're going to be doing a ton of additional cardio work. What happens is you start to lose muscle tissue. So your muscle, as you know, is metabolically active tissue. The muscle itself burns calories just to sustain itself. So the more muscle that you lose, you could lose 5 pounds a week, but you're going to be losing a combination of fat and muscle. And I've taken so many body compositions over the year, I find that most of those plans that really have the accelerated fat loss, like lose 10 pounds in 7 days, 50% of that weight was coming from lean muscle on average.
Wow.
So you're losing 50% of your weight, you're losing your fat-burning furnace. So in the long run, if you take the approach to really try to accelerate your fat loss above and beyond what's physiologically possible, you're going to damage your metabolism, you're going to be burning less calories at rest, so you're going to have to keep on decreasing the calories or keep on increasing your cardio just to have a caloric deficit, which is necessary to have fat loss and weight loss. So your goal should be to lose fat as fast as physiologically possible. That will vary a little bit from person to person depending on their whole hormonal profile, their metabolic profile, but on average people will lose about 2 pounds of fat a week if they're doing everything right. I have had people that were blessed with great metabolisms lose more than that, but if you try to have a real extreme plan, it will leave you with less muscle, slower metabolism, and also your body has enzymes that some of which store fat. Some enzymes help to release fatty acids from the fat cells to be burned as a fuel source. Those enzymes, they become more active. The ones that store fat when you go on a real restrictive, accelerated plan, they become more active, and the body does this to prevent you from going through a state of starvation. So our bodies haven't evolved too much to the point where your body doesn't know if you have a real little food intake and you're doing a lot of activity. Your body doesn't know if you're on a diet to lose 10 pounds for your daughter's bat mitzvah, or if you're going through a state of famine or starvation. So your body starts to become protective of its fat. Now you're going to lose 10 pounds, 10 pounds, 5 pounds, and all of a sudden, boom, we're stuck for life. Nowhere else to go. I'd rather lose as much as we can, so let's say it's 2 to 3 pounds a week, depending on your metabolism, and have that be steady week to week until you get to your goal. And a client of mine will come in with some advertisements, just like I'm sure you experience all the time, says lose 15 pounds. It's impossible to dump that much fat that quickly. I mean, the biggest losers, they're so overweight on the show, they're so overweight that they can get away with losing a little bit more. They will get away with losing a little bit more because they have so much to lose and their plan is so drastically different. But on average, trying to do it faster than is possible, there's a price to pay for that, and that price is going to be losing muscle. Your body will never change completely. So your body will shrink, but it won't really transform. So if you look like a big pear, you're going to look like a small pear now. It's really crazy. The end result is always the same for people that follow those programs. They diet themselves, they get stuck, they hit the plateau, they go off the diet, they gain the weight back, and then they just wait for that next magical Monday morning where they're going to start that same plan again.
And I think that's definitely the case, and I think that's why people are a little bit misled, but, that's why I try to tell people is if you had, 300 pounds to lose, maybe you could lose a little bit faster, but most of the people I work with are not that case. When you only have about 20 pounds to lose, I think what you're saying is very sound advice. Even if it's 50 pounds to lose, I would say your advice is pretty sound, huh?
Yeah, I just had a guy, he lost 72 pounds. It took us, hold on, I can tell you the dates right here, let me just look it up. Yeah, we started 7.5 months ago. He's down 72 pounds.
And wow.
Ex-football player. He was over 300 when he came in, and he's done it the right way. He was one of those guys. He had a good athletic background. He had a decent amount of muscle on him, so he was able to lose faster than some people would be able to. But it's you have to just be consistent about it. You have to make definitely some lifestyle changes, but try to go faster than that, he would have maybe lost a little bit faster the first 2 months. He would have been stuck, plateaued, and he'd be right back to where he was over 300 pounds again, guaranteed right now.
Right. Oh, absolutely.
So I said like the short-term and the long-term goals and keep them both in mind,
Mm-hmm. And another interesting point that you make is about cutting carbs too low, and I know this is always a controversial topic because immediately now, it used to be people say cut off fat, but now they're wanting to cut out all their carbs. What are some of the mistakes that people make in that sort of decision-making and the implementation?
Well, carb reduction, low-carb diets, they've been around now forever, but they've really started being promoted hard in the 70s, and different diet books have come out over the years and promoted this type of dieting. And it does lead to weight loss, and oftentimes it leads to relatively fast weight loss because of this one fact. Carbohydrates are stored in your muscles as glycogen. Every gram of glycogen or carbohydrates that's stored into your muscle attracts approximately 3 grams of water. So as soon as you cut out your carbohydrates, your body is going to burn up the carbohydrates in the muscle, plus it's going to release the water that was in the muscle. So you definitely lose a lot of weight quickly initially because you're dumping all that water out. I've also found with low-carb dieting, it does work to lose body fat. You eat less carbohydrates, your body fat is going to be reduced because there's less carbs to burn. Your body then will burn more fat as a fuel source. So it all sounds good until you get into the reality of the side effects of this type of eating. And they are as follows. In the order of importance, too, when you do low-carbohydrate dieting, one, your fiber intake almost vanishes. So now fiber, it helps control cholesterol levels. Obviously, your whole bowel is very important to have high fiber, both soluble and insoluble. So it's an unhealthy diet to follow for a long period of time. Secondly, because your muscles are about 70% water, you're going to deplete your muscles of the water that gives them that nice, full, strong look, and you're going to deplete the glycogen, so the muscles are going to have less energy. So now you're going to be a little bit more tired all day. Your muscles are going to be weaker. The muscles are going to look flatter. And when you follow this type of diet and the muscles start to get flatter and weaker, you start to burn up some muscle tissue, contrary to what the low-carb advocates say. You do lose muscle, and I have tons of body compositions to prove this. So if you were going to utilize any of the low-carbohydrate dieting components or theories, I found that you can't do it for more than a few days in a row, and then before you really get to that depleted state where you're going to start to burn up muscle tissue, you have to eat a day of high carbohydrates and higher calories. And by higher, I mean at least maintenance level for you, whatever your maintenance level of calories is, with at least about 50% of those calories coming from carbs. So to do a classic low-carb diet and just do that every day, you'll be unhealthy, you're going to lose muscle tissue, you're going to have low energy, you're going to lose strength, and plus, it's very difficult to maintain psychologically. I don't know that many people that for the rest of their lives don't want to eat even like healthy, like a piece of fruit or a bowl of oatmeal. So it's very unbalanced, and for the long haul, it's a very flawed plan.
Well, and on that note, you know, what's the reverse side? I mean, what should people then, you know, people are so confused, how should they eat, you know, as far as good carbs, because you know, I always have the image of my overweight father, the physician, telling me I need to eat more carbs and need a pop, a turnover, you know. So what do you usually recommend so people can maintain their leanness, but also, you know, get stronger, get more fit, and have that energy to their bodies?
Well, most people that have a relatively balanced metabolism, I would give them a balanced diet. So I would say 50% of your calories, or approximately 50% of your calories, come from carbohydrates. And those carbohydrates that I would have these people prioritize would be natural whole foods that are in their natural state. So things like yams and sweet potatoes, baked potatoes, even though they're high in the glycemic index, I don't get too crazy about that. So potatoes, oatmeal is great. You can have, and there's a lot of more like exotic type of grains that I eat. I have barley. I have quinoa. Then you have all your beans and your legumes. Mm-hmm. So lentils and black beans and chickpeas, they're all great. And they have a pretty good source of carbohydrates, fiber, and protein. So beans and legumes are pretty interesting food. Fruits and vegetables are going to make up a good portion of this 50% of your carbohydrates. And I would stay away from things that are processed, things that are high in sugar. So mostly most flour products and most anything that contains sugar, most baked goods, I would keep them. I'd avoid them completely or keep them to an absolute minimum.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm sorry. During these type of diets, you will have cheat meals. Like, I don't like to have anything that's so restrictive it's impossible to stay on. But what I talk about for an average guy who's not doing a bodybuilding competition, doesn't have a real crazy physique goal where he has to be, you know, 4% body fat, for the average guy, he's got to follow this 90% of the time. 10% of the time, go out. If you want pizza, eat what you want. You have to do that. Otherwise, you're going to get mentally burned out. And sometimes if you diet too much for too long, like we talked about before, your metabolism can slow down, and an occasional cheat meal can actually be helpful.
Sure. And I think that's, you know, people get a little too mental about their food sometimes and don't see the big picture. So before we start talking about, you know, your program a little more specifically and what people get with it, I just want to ask you one more question about, you know, I think what a hot food topic, especially among, you know, women, is the whole soy route. And there seems to be a whole lot of confusion. I just want to get your take on the use of soy. It seems like there's a lot of products, especially geared towards women and women's magazines, for fat loss and soy, you know, and they tend to get away from other food sources. So what are your thoughts about soy and what it does for especially women's composition?
Well, soy is definitely, for a vegetarian, it is a good source of protein. However, I think that I train and I write programs for many vegetarians, and I find that they overdo it. So soy is promoted to women because they talk about the estrogen-like activity that soy can have, which will help stave off any type of premenopausal symptoms, and they really promote to that market, the women's market. Now, I'm sure you've been on the same, a similar path as I have for the last 20 years. I've tried every single supplement possible from when I was 13 on to increase testosterone. I've yet to find one to do it.
Right.
So I'm not so sure that eating a veggie burger is going to really increase a woman's estrogen and make her make her more healthy and prevent breast cancer. So I don't jump on that bandwagon. The flip side are people that say soy has to be avoided at all costs. And they say it has to be avoided because of the estrogenic activity, which could do damage to the thyroid. And they think it may even have the flip side effect, which could cause different types of cancers. I haven't found that to be the case. Most of my clients get blood work done pretty regularly, once a year. And I would see if there was something that was dramatic that's happening for clients that ate any type of soy products in moderation, because I don't recommend more than one serving a day. And if I have a vegetarian, I mean, once in a while she may have an extra serving or a couple ounces of soy milk with her oatmeal in the morning. But I don't overdo it. I think that in moderation it's fine. It's not going to give you all the health benefits that the advocates claim, and it's not as deadly as the proponents claim. It's just another food, and once the diet industry gets their hands on something, they start twisting and turning it with their marketing. It becomes really confusing for the customers.
Absolutely. So I think that's it's usually that it goes along the same. It's somewhere in the middle, right?
Yeah. It's like everything else. Balance is the key. If you had one glass of soy milk a day, or if you had, for vegetarians, they're going to have some type of soy products here and there as meat substitutions, and I haven't found any problem with that. And at the same token, I've had vegetarians where I said, we have to cut some of the soy out. You're having four glasses of soy milk a day. You're having a veggie burger, which is soy-based, for lunch, for dinner. You're having, these fake chicken patties, which are more soy, and then you're eating edamame and soy nuts for at night, so it's a bit much,
Right, absolutely.
So it's definitely moderation. It's not a problem.
So let's talk specifically about your program, John, because I don't think people realize the amount of success in the years that you've been doing this. It's pretty awesome when a program like this comes out to people that don't have regular access to you. So tell us a little bit about what people get with your program, what they could look for when they sign up your program, because, again, we want to make sure that people know to go to howtogetrippedabs.com.
Well, my program is it targets body fat and body fat loss from head to toe. I have to tell people that. They say, is this just an ab workout? It's not just an ab workout. It's a full-body workout. It burns body fat for women are going to lose body fat in their belly region, but they're going to also lose in their hamstrings and their gluteal fold. Men are going to lose their love handles, their abs. They're going to get ripped all over. So it's a full body workout, and I gave a lot of additional abdominal work, and especially I give a lot of abdominal bracing, so it's very unique abdominal work in there, but it's not just an ab workout. And sometimes people ask me that and I have to clear that up right away. It comes with, I have a beginner routine, so everyone can get started. I give all the theory, and then I give the actual nuts and bolts, take all the guesswork out, and here is the routine. So if you want to read about the theory, I have the main book with all the theory for people that want to be a little bit more educated about what they're doing. And then I also have everything laid out for you in like a quick start format. So you could buy the product, you could be following it then the very next day. I have a beginner phase in regards to the training, and that beginner phase will prep them for the actual How to Get Ripped Abs program, which is a 12-week routine, and there's four different phases during that 12 weeks. I really spilled the beans here. I gave guys and girls, I gave them the best of everything that I've used here. I really didn't hold anything back. You'll have detailed descriptions and pictures of each and every exercise that I recommend. and little tricks and tips on every exercise that I've found to make them more effective or safer, and or just easier to learn. That's the training portion of it. There's a nutrition portion as well. And again, in the main book, I give you all the theory, and then I lay it out for you. I have meal plans from 1,200 calories to 4,000. I give you a very, very easy formula to figure out what your optimal caloric intake will be for accelerated fat loss. And then I have the meal plans laid out for you. In the back of the meal plans, I put together a great nutritional almanac that you can go and you could very easily, I've created a pretty cool system in there where you could take one food from a category and easily switch it out for another food in the same category. So you could have endless variety. As for bonuses, I've put together a great recipe book. They're all approved by me, tested by me. And these recipes are there for people who don't want to eat like the same boring thing every day. You have tons of options, breakfast, lunch, dinner. And I also put together a shake recipe book that's a free bonus as well, where I have everything from like chocolate peanut butter to chocolate chip mint. So sometimes just for the guys that do drink shakes, it does get boring to have it just chocolate and vanilla all the time. So
sure.
I get plenty of options there. Guys that sign up now, they're going to get a free membership to, I call it the Lifetime Club, and whenever I find any new like scientific study or if I have any empirical evidence that shows me that something can be done better, or any new tips or tricks that I could find, once you sign up for the program, you'll have all my new findings for life. So you're on the list to get a lifetime membership there.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's great. When you get a, usually you go to the bookstore, you get a book. It could be outdated. A lot of the human body is not going to evolve, much from day to day. So a good nutrition plan and a good training protocol will be timeless. But there always are things that do come out that I will test, and anything that is working really well, then you'll have access to that at no charge.
And for people that just don't get it, to train with you is a pretty awesome experience, but it also would cost them a good penny. So this is a program that people that don't have the, fortunate ability to go see in New Jersey would definitely have a great program to follow. And unlike anything you probably have seen, and it's very comprehensive. And to be correct here, it's both friendly for men and women, right? So both
yes.
Men and women can do it.
Yes. It's great for, great for men, women, like I said, beginners, intermediate, or advanced. I did create programs for everyone in there, and when I created this program, I kept in mind also people, if they wanted to train in a gym, I designed them so they're gym friendly, the workouts. If they wanted to train at home, I designed them so they could be home friendly, and just making it, you have to get just minimal equipment to do these workouts at home, or if you wanted to train. If you lived in a nice area, you could do the workouts outside with just some very, very inexpensive and basic equipment.
Awesome. So I really encourage people to go to howtogetrippedabs.com. I've seen the program. It's incredibly comprehensive. It's something that, especially with summer around the corner, I'm sure a lot of people would be interested in following. So, John, I'd really like to thank you for your time. I know you're incredibly busy. This is an awesome experience to be able to talk to you about this subject matter. And best of luck in the program, and really hope that people go nuts over it because it is a great program.
Thank you very much. I look forward to doing this again.
Absolutely.